How did this project, the Dead Poets Society of America, come to be?
I first went to Robert Frost's grave in 2006. I live in New England, in Maine, and I had no idea that, like, 7 years later, I would have visited 500 poets' graves. I never even conceived of anything so astounding. But once I began visiting poets' graves and meeting prominent American poets who often visit poets' graves, I realized I was documenting something really essential in terms of our American literary tradition, and that would be visiting poets' graves and also writing poems about visiting poets' graves.
Poets often lead interesting lives, but what's interesting about seeing their graves?
In many cases, their graves give wonderful clues about where they were from or what they believed, or in many cases, how people wanted to memorialize them. In other words, a lot of poets maybe didn't even make their own grave. It was their family or some state society, or group that actually made the big memorial. So the graves tell you something about the poet and their work in many cases, and I find that fascinating. I went to this little town of Turner, Arkansas. It's basically two roads that meet with farmland all around it. And Poet Laureate was buried there. Her name was Lily Peter. There was no epitaph, but I was so excited to find on her grave somebody had etched Pegasus, which is the ancient symbol of poetry going back to Mount Helicon in Greece. Even like the Poetry Foundation today, their symbol is Pegasus. So just the fact that in the middle of this cornfield in rural Arkansas, I went to her grave and I saw this lovely Pegasus etched on the stone really touched me. And it showed to me that, you know, Lily wanted people to remember that she was a poet. It doesn't matter the genre or the style, which are very different in many cases, but the project seeks to honor the fact that the muses, in a sense, have inspired these people to speak and sing, and their communities then honor them for that.
You just mentioned genre and style, and I was wondering, for your project, who qualifies as a poet?
It's broad, but it does have a stipulation in that you have to have one book of poems published either in your life or posthumously. And the other qualifier is, however, it must be published by someone else. So in other words, there are hundreds of other poets out there in American history that paid for and published their own books of poetry. And a few of them might actually be quite good, but they do not qualify as a poet because I feel you need to have at least that inkling of recognition from someone else who published your work and saw the value in it. So only one book is what you need. And my children laugh because I'm a poet, but I don't have a book yet, so I don't even qualify as a dead poet if I were to die.
Oh.
But my one son, Charles, said he'd make sure he got one of my books published afterwards, so I would eventually qualify.
So someone can one day visit your grave.
Yeah, which, you know, John Updike's son. You know the name John Updike? Not everyone does. He was a
right, of course,
novelist.
Yeah.
Well, he was a poet as well, and in this project, I met his son, Michael, who carved John's tombstone. Gorgeous tombstone work. Michael Updike is making my tombstone for me. We haven't finished it yet, but I'm really privileged that he'll be making mine whenever my kids need it.
How old are you?
54.
Okay, and so you're thinking ahead.
In the first year of this project, I'd been to 150 graves. I nearly became a dead poet from New Jersey. I had a heart attack 5 years ago, last week, and I nearly died, and I had 6 stents put in my heart. And so that added a bit of urgency and perspective to my project, which led to one of the first lessons that I've learned is that life is brief. And another lesson is that I'm grateful for every day above ground. And as I visit poets' graves, I think about those things, that I am already older than probably a third of the poets whose graves I visited. And I'm grateful for that.
Well, then what keeps you going on this trip around the country.
Well, you know what has kept me going mostly? It's not just my own fascination with poets' graves and their writing about death. It has been the tremendous response from poets all over America that I meet. I've had a lot of self-doubt, like, this is strange. I need to go back to a regular job. I'm running out of money. I don't have any more grants. But when I get responses from people that encourage me and say how much it means to them, I'll give you an example. Today we're meeting at Arna Bontemps' grave in Nashville. We're having one of his cousins, probably, you know, cousin after a generation or two, come and read. And I'm always touched by the way that family members of the poet so appreciate the fact that people are remembering. So I think that's one thing that also keeps me going, is I meet wives or children or cousins or lovers of dead poets, and they're always so happy to meet me at a grave and to share about the life and poetry of their loved ones. That's probably the most meaningful for me.
As you just mentioned, you're going to Nashville today, and I'm talking to you from the road. You're inside your car. Because you're in the midst of a tour around the Southeast. What was your goal for this trip?
You know, this trip was, the main goal was to reach my 500th poet's grave, which I achieved just a few days ago in Birmingham at the awesomely amazing grave of Sun Ra, African-American jazz musician and futurist who actually believed he came from Saturn and was not born. He's the first of my 500 who arrived Saturn. But on this trip, because of the events in the last year in Ferguson and Baltimore, I decided I wanted to focus on African-American poets and their voices. You know, the second week of this journey, I was in Charleston with the poet laureate, Marjorie Wentworth. And 2 days after we had a big celebration in Charleston, those horrible murders happened. And she's been able to write poetry to comfort the grieving community there. And when we were in Atlanta, we realized, you know, this wonderful poet, Albury Whitman, was an AME pastor, and he spoke forcefully about justice. You know, we all agreed he would have been the target in his day. The other poet I discovered 3 weeks ago when I was first in Atlanta was Wellborn Victor Jenkins. And he wrote a poem in 1949 about the incident at Monroe. And it's called A Requiem for the Victims of the Massacre. Four people were lynched in Monroe, Georgia in 1949. And he actually went to the site of that lynching and wrote this incredibly powerful 30-page poem, which has been forgotten, sadly. Few people know about it. And I just felt that poem was so relevant to our society today, that the voices of today's African-American poets and any poet, not just African-Americans, but, you know, we turn to our poets often in terms of crisis or comfort. And I think it's important to resurrect these dead poets into our literary conversation again. We can't let them be forgotten.
Sounds like it's a learning experience, not just for you, but for everyone who is involved.
I call it like my own journey of discovery. I learn something new in every city I go to, and that's one of the cool things about it.
As you continue this tour over the next few weeks, people can actually follow along. You're keeping a blog, and they can also catch up on what you did in Atlanta over the weekend.
Yeah, Facebook has kind of become the go-to place where I chronicle all the adventures and the poets' graves I go to. So that link is on our blog as well, to the Facebook page.
Thanks so much for your time. This has been really interesting.
Oh, I'm so glad. I appreciate your interest so much, and thank you a lot.